a lot of people think like, okay, we can do some technical tweaks on the website and it's just going to rank. It's not going to be doing that. If you're not producing relevant, in-depth content that is better than the content that is right now on page one, you're not going to be on page one just for that very simple reason. And it applies like for everything.
This is Digital Marketer. Hey everyone, this is Mark DeGrasse, the president of Digital Marketer, and this is the podcast that keeps you up to date on everything you need to know when it comes to digital marketing, from the platforms you can be focused on to the cutting-edge tactics and tools that are working today. Today, our guest is Julia Borenstova, the founder of Innovation Park, and we're talking SaaS B2B and how they took a company from only $200,000, grew it to $20 million in only 4 years, and all while eating Belgian chocolate, which is my favorite part of your story. So, welcome, Julia.
Thank you, Mark, for the introduction. So yes, today I would like to tell you step-by-step case study on how exactly we scaled this B2B SaaS company in 4 years and what exact steps we follow. And at the end of the call, I'm also going to share the exact blueprint and you're going to be able to do the same thing for your company and hopefully implement all those steps.
Hey, I love that.
So the story started this way. SaaS company contacted us and they were like a very old 25-year-old brand. And they realized that they cannot scale any further. And they wanted to create a sister brand multiple times. Each time they created it, they failed miserably. And they decided to try one last time just in case, you know, this time's going to work out. And they chose us for this experiment. And they said like, well, try it, give it a few months, see if you can do anything with it. If not, we're just going to kill it forever because it's hopeless.
Wow. Now, just for the listeners, what was the space? Like what B2B service were they doing?
It was actually bookie software.
Booking. Okay. So like a Calendly?
No, it was a bookie software for like the gaming space.
Oh, for gaming. Okay. Gotcha.
Absolutely. A big player, but I cannot say who they are.
Ah, okay.
Super. So we decided to take a look. And what we started working on, first of all, is we looked at every single touch point for the customer journey, like where people heard about them, what kind of buttons they clicked, all possible sources where they could find them, and see if things are working or they are broken. And we found a lot of broken things, of course, but also we realized one more thing. They did not really know who this audience was for the sister brand. Because when you create a sister brand, it needs to be somewhat different. So the offer was exactly the same. The audience was exactly the same. So that was their initial pitfall. So I said, well, you cannot create a sister brand like that because it needs to be slightly different than what is the new demographic that you have not been able to attract. And we found out that it was a younger demographic. So unlike the main brand that was attracting older people who wanted to jump on sales call, in this case, it was a younger demographic who wanted to start a business, wanted to discover themselves and try things. And they did not like jumping on sales calls. Instead, they would prefer if they could do some education, try it out, see if it works for them, and only reach out for additional support if they need it. So that was the major start. We created whole company identity around that.
Just how did you actually go about finding that it was a younger demographic? Did you guys do surveys or what was the process that kind of led you there?
Yes, we talked to the sales team. We did some research on our own for the competition, like who the like competitors are targeting. They have a lot of competitors targeting variety of demographics. And of course, sales team gave us a very good insight on who they usually talk to and who they were able to convert and not, and why. That's how we found that target demographic was the closest opportunity.
Excellent.
So then we crafted all the messaging around that and also called our sales team support team that was only like the next step after people have been able to try the software. And after that, we started doing the ads. So the ads, traditionally speaking, for this old company was the only source of revenue. So if Google was having bad days, the company was having hiccups, salespeople were complaining, and you know, everybody was pissed off. So that was the next problem we could potentially fix. So as soon as we started scaling the ads, we suggested we should look for diversification opportunities. But they have also not been able to really create scalable source of organic leads, because they said like, well, we only can get this many leads. And after that, we're tapped out. So that's why we need ads. Otherwise, we really cannot bring consistent conversions. So this is where we uncovered next opportunity that actually appeared golden during our scaling process. We looked at the account, and by this time we have already been working on this brand for a couple years and spent like $1 million. So it was a good amount of information in that Google account, and saw what kind of searches converted the best. So like if somebody typed a certain thing and they converted at like 30% or 50%, that's probably was a good close match. So we started from those top 30 high converting search keywords and started creating a variety of articles on those topic clusters. And that's how we increased, not only started bringing more and more organic conversions, we also increased conversion rate up to 40% on average per year, which is insane, like not just for SaaS industry or B2B, but in general.
Now, for the articles you actually produced, how did you distribute those, or did you actually promote them with paid media as well?
So mostly we have been, we created blog articles with our, we have writing team who is like well-versed in the industry and did good amount of research for that. But then we also did a campaign outreach to get the backlinks for those articles, because it's also very competitive environment. So, you know, if you sneeze, you lose. So we definitely have to go an extra mile. It was also shared on the social media accounts, but we did not see massive results from that. However, it brings me another interesting point. One thing that helped us a lot, and especially in the beginning when we did not have, like we barely had any authority in the space, because it was like a new emerging company out of nowhere. Everybody was surprised who the heck they are, because they did not know the link with this big company. And what helped us in the beginning is creating videos, informational videos for each of the blogs and ranking those videos while linking it to the website. So because it's much easier to rank a video on YouTube than an article, the competition is much bigger. And when YouTube sees that this video is ranking and is linked to that article, you have much better chances to then rank the article. So that strategy actually saved us in the beginning. But down the road, it was also link building campaign.
Excellent. Hey everyone, I want to quickly interrupt the podcast for a special announcement. If you're listening to this podcast because you want to become a better marketer, then I want to share with you what I believe to be the most comprehensive digital marketing program on the market today. It's called the Digital Marketing Mastery Certification. You'll learn to leverage the tools and channels to predictably and profitably drive awareness, leads, sales, and referrals. Everything you need to know to become a true master of digital marketing. We'll take an in-depth look at the core digital marketing competencies, including content, email, social media, community, digital advertising, data and optimization, and more. After earning your digital marketing strategy certificate, you'll have the tools to effectively reach your target audience through a full scope marketing strategy. Get started today at digitalmarketer.com/strategycert.
So how much time did it take to actually start posting the articles like, hey, we're going to make this organic push, to starting to see results and that big increase in ROI?
We started, actually, we were lucky because Google updates were not as frequent as right now in the before, right? Like right now, they're like
breaking everything.
Exactly, which is unfortunate, but in some cases also fortunate. In our case, we published the articles and I think the update happened like 2 months later. So all of a sudden we saw like out of nowhere, 4 conversions, like really large conversions. Like each conversions was about 20,000 value. So all of a sudden, the beginning of the month, we got like 4 conversions. And we were like, wow, it's already starting to work. We did not expect it. But then we kept seeing increase throughout like half a year. I think in half a year, we already saw like it's paying off. And about a year later, it was on par, like the amount of revenue we brought with paid ads and organic leads after a year was about the same. But yeah, we have done really aggressive strategy though. So it was not a couple articles.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So after that, we started looking on the channels, like what else we can do. And what I found very important for us and for other companies we have been working with using similar strategy is tracking ROI, because especially when it's busy season, shareholders just want to bring revenue, turn the ads on, maximize it, and it's not always the best use of resources. And we have seen that the competition is trying to hijack the cost of ads, like trying the bully method and increase it, like one each click would now cost you like $1,000 and things like that. However, in the organic space, because we started ranking for so many keywords, there were many more opportunities. So instead of doubling down on ads, which was quite problematic at that point, we doubled down on organic content again and increased the amount of videos, because we saw, if you look at ROI, especially the size of the client that the organic leads were bringing, actually much better quality of the clients versus the paid ads were bringing, because like people took the time, researched, read the full article, educated themselves, tried it out, and then contacted support. So it was much better quality. So when we looked at our ROI for each revenue channel, we saw that that was the space where you could maximize it.
Excellent. Yeah, well, I always love hearing that organic actually contributes a lot to ROI, because a lot of times it's so much easier to show it when you're talking about paid ads. It's like, oh, here's a conversion. But when you say the article produced revenue, it gets a lot more difficult. So, you know, good job.
I think what scares most owners is, you know, you don't know when you can actually see the results with organic, because there's no way to tell. When you can look at the ad, there are some initial metrics, people are clicking, like almost instantly as you set up the campaign, you can see the clicks, some performance, so you know it's working. While in the case of organic, you literally have to trust and or know how to verify the people to know what they're doing, which it's really important, I think, to break like the misconception that a lot of people think like, okay, we can do some technical tweaks on the website and it's just going to rank. It's not going to be doing that. If you're not producing relevant, in-depth content that is better than the content that is right now on page one, you're not going to be on page one, just for that very simple reason. And it applies like for everything.
That's amazing. So basically you start with the paid ads, you worked with that for about 2 years, and then you started really scaling what the results by focusing on their organic side and actually building that up while still doing the paid media. So I think, you know, really that's a good representation of what I think everybody's going to have to go through to maintain ROI, because the cost of the ads, like you were talking about, is it just gets incredibly expensive, and it leads to not being able to scale. Or a lot of times the actual ad campaigns that are working end up plateauing, and then it's like, well, it was working before and we were paying more money, why isn't it generating more? But I think, you know, most people kind of are starting to expect the articles and expect the education. When you're talking about the younger demographic that started working, is that like 20 somethings, or what's the age range in there?
25 to 35.
35. Okay. So not crazy young, not teenagers or anything.
No, teenagers, like, I mean, like occasionally they're probably like a little bit younger people, but mostly it's like 25 to 35.
No, that makes sense. Now, for the actual article, so you got them on the website through the backlinking or through the, say, YouTube post. They came to the website. How did you guys go about optimizing the articles to lead to conversions? Did you integrate banners or buttons, or what did you find most effective?
First of all, we definitely want to implement all the A/B testing we have learned with those millions of dollars we have spent on ads. So if we know green square button with black text in it saying this and that is converting the best, we're placing that exact same button on the call to action in the blog post. Second of all, knowing the demographic, of course, we need to use the, the language they use that we also learned from the sales calls. This is an element that I see actually majority of the businesses ignore because they think it does not really matter. But it's like really easy to implement. Like you literally can, especially nowadays, so many transcribing tools. You can transcribe the sales conversations, then just use some tools to pick the recurring adjectives and word expressions that people use, inject that in your copy, and instantly seeing it converting much better.
Wow. Oh, that's great advice. Yeah, because I mean, you know what's working. You already spent all the money to find out, you know, which ads are actually working. Why not just incorporate the same language into the writing itself? And then there you go. Now, for the articles, did you usually direct people directly to the trial? Was that the call to action?
Yes, it's the trial. It's always the trial. So we have essentially been, because we knew like we have different customer profiles. Again, this is all based around the audience and who they are. There are several customer profiles. Some people are concerned about support, like when I'm going to be starting to do, and I'm going to, you know, having some issues, troubleshooting, are there going to be people supporting me? So there's going to be a whole range of articles about that. How are we going to be supporting you in each of these situations? So people rest assured. And there is another target demographic that want to see like how their business is going to be able to scale. And do you have tools to help me scale? Like aggressive type of person? We have information for them. And it applies to every kind of customer profile.
So when you were making the article content, were you thinking of, okay, we're just going to pick this avatar, pick this language, and then you make the, and keyword, of course, and then you make the article, and then what percentage did you focus on each avatar? Or was it kind of like, we'll just, you know, hit three avatars and every article focus on one?
So first of all, we start with the search terms, and we did not specifically create an article around the search term, but we could tell because we took the time and analyzing those telephone conversations and talking to the sales team that we know like, okay, this is relating to, you know, such and such issues that we have. And we always create, no matter what kind of articles we create them around those three avatars. So it does not necessarily apply to each avatar, whatever they're searching, you know, but if they're looking for some tools that we know help them scale, we know which kind of avatar that is.
Oh, just when you're integrating like the ads for the conversion within the article, are those more general ads or are they specific to one of the avatars?
The ads are mostly general. And I find that as long as it's highlighting the benefits and you have a really good match between like what people are clicking on and what you represent, that's good. But also we made it very clear from the top of the headline, like what we are and what we are not. Because in the beginning, the company told us sometimes people call them for various things from like, can you fill my telephone card or something like that? Or do you sell some presents? Or is it a gift card shop or some things that we had no idea how on earth they could think that?
Yeah, that happens. You know, well, I think a lot of times people read like one line and then they're like, oh, well, that's it. And then they make a huge assumption of what the thing is and then has nothing to do with it. My wife talks about it sometimes when she sends a big text message and I grab one part of it. I'm like, you mean this? And then I'm wrong. And I have to go back and read the whole thing. But no, it's amazing that you guys were able to kind of pivot and diversify your marketing like that, because it's not easy, I know, to especially convince people of, hey, we're going to do this thing. It's going to take a little bit of time, but eventually it's going to be a higher ROI, you know, more organic kind of lead generation and better lead generation based on the people that you're looking for, which are those ones that want to be educated and that have to do that kind of previous research prior to making the investment of a subscription. So well done. And you did it all in, was it 4 years or?
Yeah, it was almost 4 years, 3.5, 4 years. But yeah, eventually the company started being a little bit concerned because the sister brand was competing against the main brand already because they could not tell who is like a better one or like the bigger one, which is a good sign.
Oh yeah, that means that you win. You're competing against the big guy who's probably spending way more money on ads. And it was probably an experiment for them to be like, okay, well, let's see if it actually does anything. So love that. I'm a huge fan of content marketing. So the fact that you guys were able to make that pivot is enormous. Now you actually talked about, you have a link for people to learn more about the process or?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm going to share the blueprint and the step-by-step case study that we discussed today, how we did it with screenshots, with some metrics, and also the blueprint that is ideal for B2B and SaaS companies to implement in much more detail than what we discuss here right now. And it's going to allow you to see step-by-step where you might be missing on some revenue, like how you can recover it without allocating any extra advertising cost or anything at all. And statistically speaking, if a company is making $10 million, they lose about 10% just going through the leaks, the revenue leaks. So the first thing you want to do before scaling is fixing those leaks. So we're going to show you exactly how. So the link for that is going to be innovation-park.eu/revenue-blueprint.
Excellent. Well, we'll definitely link that in the notes. And yeah, I encourage everybody to check it out. I think this is one of the most kind of succinct case studies that's been given from, you know, going from a probably mainly paid ad type of marketing strategy to integrating this organic side that then is able to increase your ROI. And, you know, I'm sure you spend less on ads than you would have just because you have all this organic traffic going. So excellent case study and really appreciate you coming on to talk about it. And I definitely recommend everybody check out that link and get that blueprint, you know, find those holes and really start thinking about, hey, how can I integrate the kind of edutainment or education factor into your marketing to get people who, you know, essentially require that? Because, you know, I've definitely, you know, just me looking at services sometimes, if you don't have much info or you try to drop me into like the middle of a sales process, I'll just say no. Like, I don't know enough. I'm going to go find somebody softer that could inform me a little bit more prior to making that decision. So I think you did an excellent job and looking forward to seeing that blueprint.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
All right. And thank you so much for listening. Be sure to hit that follow button so you get notified when all of our new episodes release. Please share this with that friend who's clueless about digital marketing. And don't forget to visit digitalmarketer.com where you can access all of our courses, certifications, and training programs. Thanks again, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
This is Digital Marketer.
Get ready for the two easiest ways for you to generate product photos for your e-commerce store. I'm Lauren Petrullo, founder and CEO of Mongoose Media and Digital Marketer Academy faculty member. I've managed over 50,000 SKUs for over 100 different e-commerce sites, and I cannot tell you the importance of quality product photos. Not only are they important for your website, but they're great to be repurposed in your email marketing campaigns, your paid ad initiatives, and your organic social media content. It's imperative that you have great photos because great photos sell your products and start conversations with your consumers. There are two great solutions when seeking out quality product photos for your e-commerce site. One, UGC. We know that native user-generated content wins all day on social. When you can get your customers to share back their use of your products in their voice, in their personal applications, you will see dividends when that is repurposed in your paid ads and organic social feeds. Secondly, don't have customers or UGC yet? Not a problem. There are cost-effective solutions in which you can outsource that photography. This and so much more is covered in my modules in our e-commerce cert with Digital Marketer.